The Home Show with Sinead Ryan.
Thanks to the Commission for Regulation of Utilities, Ireland's independent energy and water regulator. Let the CRU help you switch on to your rights, savings and energy safety.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, this is The Home Show on News Talk with me, Sinead Ryan. You're very welcome along this morning. Coming up this week, the construction sector might be back in action, but how will the new safety measures operating on building sites make housing more expensive? Well, the CIF's Dermot Carey will be in with all of the details on that. Are you planning on selling or renting your home? Hollywood stylist to the stars, Natasha Rocco-Devine, will be here to tell us about the importance of staging your house in the era of virtual viewings. Have you been having trouble sleeping with the warmer weather? Well, resident architect and designer Roisin Murphy has been looking at duvets, beddings and blankets. All you need to keep cool this summer. You can text us on 53106 for 30 cent and email us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. Well, we've gained and lost a heat wave, it seems, in the last couple of weeks. Is it back to a normal Irish summer now, or will we get a second wave? And I don't mean of the coronavirus. We're all hoping Monday coming sees further lifting of restrictions in where we can go and who we can see and what we can do. And it seems an eternity since all of this began. So we're looking forward to that. And perhaps now is the beginning of the light at the end of a very dark tunnel for most of us. Anyway, here in The Home Show, we do try to provide a silver lining to the doom and gloom and give you informative views around housing and homes and all of that. So if you want to listen back to this or any other programme, you can do so on newstalk.com, on our app, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
The Home Show on Newstalk.
Thanks to the Commission for Regulation of Utilities, Ireland's independent energy and water regulator. Let the CRU help you switch on to your rights, savings and energy safety.
While many industries are still waiting to get going again, construction is back in action, albeit with many changes to its work practices. COVID safety measures have been brought in, of course, across all construction sites. But how are they working on a day-to-day basis? And will they cause delays and extra costs for homeowners? Now, the Construction Industry Federation recently said it'll take a year before it'll be back to pre-pandemic levels. So I thought we'd have it's about time that we kind of checked in with that and see what's going on. So joining me now is Director of Safety and Training with the CIF, Dermot Carey. Dermot, you're very welcome to The Home Show today.
Thank you for the invite, Sinead.
Now, talk to me about the return to work for construction workers, because you were kind of the earliest back to normality, or whatever that accounts for these days. What has it been like? What measures have been brought onto sites now just to keep everybody safe?
Yeah, I suppose, Sinead, when the initial closure came on the 27th, one of the key things that we realised is we needed to have a comprehensive plan for the industry to return to work. And that plan needs to be based on public health guidelines. So we set up a working group to develop what we call the Construction Sector C19 Pandemic Standard Operating Procedure, SOP for short, just to make it easy, which sets out how the industry will get back to work. And that was the basis of our plan for return to work. And once the national protocol was published by the Health and Safety Authority and the Department of Business, we made some slight changes to ours in order to ensure that we were in compliance with the national protocol.
Yeah.
But essentially, the plan sets out how a worker will get to work from getting up in the morning, how they travel to work, how they get into security, how they work within a site, dealing with things like close operations, and then how they travel from work.
And have you found that most people, most of your contractors were happy enough with what you did? I had a look at your website actually to see those, and there were very comprehensive guidelines on it. Most of them reasonably compliant. Any tweaks that you had to make?
Well, I suppose to some extent there were quite a few of our members working during the close down as they were deemed to be essential services.
Yeah.
So they were providing services for the HSE, etc. So they actually piloted these processes for us. Feedback was they're difficult to implement. We were never naive enough to think they were going to be easy, because they put quite a limit and constriction on work. But they can be done. But it does obviously impact on productivity.
Yeah, it seems to me, though, Dermot, that it must be very, very difficult on sites where you have work people very close together, whether they're painting or electricians or builders, you know, even just for the standard health and safety stuff about lifting and transporting equipment and blocks and all that kind of thing. How can you find that balance between needing that to get that done? You can't just have one person doing a job that two people did before, but keeping them kind of 2 metres apart, it must be challenging.
It is challenging, and part of the plan outlines how work processes have to be redesigned to consider how do you keep people apart. There's a hierarchy of protection. One of the first thing is on that hierarchy is you don't do it, and that's one of the first key advices within our SOP. Does it really need to be done in that manner, and can you do it a different way? So the use of machinery and redesigning the process is key to some of it. Inevitably, as you've indicated, there will be some operations, which we call close working operations, that will have to be done. But even that depends on, you know, the orientation of people. Are they face-to-face? Are they side-to-side? Are they back-to-back?
Okay.
All of those things have to be taken into account.
Yeah. And, of course, you guys would be well used to PPE, the protective equipment that we're only beginning to get used to now. Because, I mean, not much like, I suppose, nurses on the front line and other industries, you would have had helmets and masks and gloves and overalls. And so there probably isn't a huge change there, or is there?
You're right. The industry, I suppose, is one of the industries that is used to wearing PPE as a general requirement, such as helmets and high-vis. The key thing is to try and mentor people and try and remind them on a day-to-day basis of the whole requirement of social distancing. And that's been the challenge, I think, for most contractors, mentoring and coaching people. And with the best will in the world, people forget. There's no maliciousness in it.
No, it's just human nature, isn't it? Okay, now, in terms of, I suppose, the good news on this is that you were the industry that was probably, you know, left work the latest and started back the earliest. So your gap in terms of productivity was probably the shortest. Now, the CSO figures that were released on Thursday morning show that construction is still surging, even for the first 3 months of this year when everybody went into lockdown, especially in residential. It's up 4.7% on the quarter, 15% year to year. That is great news, isn't it?
It is good news, but I wouldn't underestimate the impact of the last 8 to 10 weeks of shutdown and what's going to happen in the future. That's very unsure in relation to the industry. We had been growing, and indeed one of my key roles was trying to attract people into the industry. So, I mean, I suppose our key objective at this stage is to ensure that we maintain the level of employment that we currently have and hopefully build on that. But there is obviously concern of the impact on productivity and, as you say, like the delivery of programs and indeed the future projects, the concern that will there be adequate projects?
Yes, and I know that the CIF has cited kind of delays and increased costs. Now, you know, your CEO Tom Parlin had to row heavily back in comments that he suggested about the Children's Hospital. They thought initially notions that it was going to go up by 40%, which of course are a bit nonsense. But what about homeowners, Dermot, in terms of residential? I know there are sites going to be delayed. Maybe the building will take a little bit longer and the extra measures will cost a little bit more. What do you say about homeowners who might be worried that new houses will cost more next year?
My own personal opinion is, Sinead, that inevitably with the requirements that have been set out in relation to the working environment that we just described, that extends the duration which it does take to complete any project, and that in itself brings cost. Currently, that's not, we haven't fully estimated what that level of cost will be, but it's a no benefit. I want to reassure everybody that it's not in anybody's benefit that there is extra cost. But in reality, that's what we're facing.
Okay. All right. Well, we will wait and see. And listen, I wish your industry the best of luck, because goodness knows we are not out of the woods yet on housing, and we have still a job of work to be done. All right. Well, Director of Safety and Training with CIF, Dermot Carey, thanks for joining us today on
Thank you,
The Home Show.
The Home Show on News Talk.
Thanks to the Commission for Regulation of Utilities, Ireland's independent energy and water regulator. Let the CRU help you switch on to your rights, savings and energy safety.
You're very welcome back to the show today. Now, are you planning on selling or renting out your home this year, when you're allowed to, of course, and that market is back? Or could you get a faster sale and potentially boost the price by making your home is staged to look its most fabulous? Well, it's more important than ever because of all the virtual viewings that are going on, and we have brought into the show award-winning interior design staging specialist from The Interiors Nerd, and I'm delighted to welcome Natasha Rocca Devine to the show. Natasha, you're very, very welcome to The Home Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now,
I'm not a huge fan.
Yeah, I'm not normally accused of being overly bright, but I did actually manage to work out that the Interiors NRD, a nerd, are actually your initials.
They are my initials, Natasha Rocca Devine. So I was going to call it Nerd Designs or Nerd Interiors, but you know, I think it's kind of a fun, you know, spin on my name, and it gets people chatting anyway.
It does. And are you a bit of a nerd when it comes to
nerd in general. I am, like, I'm just two masters. I study, I'm always doing courses, and I'm a geek. Everyone assumes totally different from me, but yeah, I'm a bit of a geek. I love to learn, and I think I'm just very, I think as a designer, and you know yourself in journalism, I think I'm a curious person. Mm-hmm. So naturally by nature, it's, you know, perfect for design because there's always moving trends, and the market, particularly with COVID 19, is hugely evolving and, you know, challenging us all.
Very, very strange times at the moment. And when it comes to particularly your business, which is showing off houses, there's no houses being shown off in the real world at the moment. So tell us a little bit about how that has changed the business model, and also, you know, are there things that people can do now if they do need to make their house look really, really well for online viewers?
Yeah, so online viewing, I suppose, can go two ways. It could be photographs, you know, which, depending on whether you're working with an estate agent or just uploading, say, for rentals to Daft or things like that. So online would be the photography, which, so it's massively important more than ever. You know, preparing that styling is just absolutely fundamental to getting a rental or sale. And secondly, there's virtual, you know, there's tours which can be done, and, you know, depending if they've been photographed before COVID, or they can be done in three, you know, kind of mock-ups, you know.
Indeed.
With software.
We had we had Angela Keegan from myhome.ie in last week, and she was talking about the e-viewings that they're doing live through properties that are for sale. So they've the agent walking through and kind of looking at different aspects of it. And it struck me that that is as close probably as you're going to get to walking in and touching, feeling and smelling, you know, what a
absolutely
property looks like.
And I was actually, I was an estate agent in Los Angeles, and then I did kind of, that's where I specialized in staging. So over in LA, due to the size, you know, like I worked, say, in Hollywood Hills and Beverly Hills, it's huge. You know, you could be driving 2 hours between properties. So this kind of tours and virtual staging, or virtual staging and virtual tours, were like absolutely part of the, you know, the where I learned staging and design. So I think this is going to become, to be honest, more normal. You know, I think people are realizing the benefits of this because, you know, you can shortlist instead of going and viewing lots of properties. You can see, you know, as you said, as much as you possibly can online, and you can see like 4 or 5 properties within one day, you know, that way, mm-hmm. or depending on the agent's availability. So I think it's, you know, it's the best we can do right now, but I also think it's a great business model going forward, you know, to keep this process going, to save people time. And also you can have lots of family members logging in, you know, and different people logging in at once, especially
the mother-in-law about the bathrooms.
Well, you can put it on private chat, but, and also they don't. So I was on the Knight Frank webinar for first-time buyers yesterday, and they were saying, you know, it is great because you don't have to obviously put the camera on, but it saves a lot of time in the early stages. You know, you can literally, some people can just see, okay, that's just not for us, by that one tour, and you've just saved yourself and the agent a lot of time. So in that sense, it's, you know, I think that's going to be the way forward, you know, when all of this is lifted.
You mentioned your time that you spent in Hollywood and Beverly Hills. It all sounds very glamorous. And the first thing that comes into my head, you know, are these giant big houses, bling, bling city, all new, all kind of super styled. What is the key difference, as if I need to ask, between that staging, the work you were doing over there, and what people look for over here?
I think in Ireland, the top designers that would be, you know, covering a lot of the show homes would have a consistent style. So you would recognize their style, you know, as you go through, you would say that looks like designer A or designer B. If you're looking frequently across lots of different show homes, you'll see a pattern or through magazines. Whereas in LA, it's the opposite where I studied. So if you are being paid to stage a property, you're paying a lot of money to stand out. If you bring your same style to the neighbor's house or the next design, you're going to be fired. So it's very unique. Each project is very much an art curation for the staging companies. So I brought that back to Ireland insofar as none of my staging projects have been the same. So you won't recognize my trend, you know, other than say wallpaper or lighting or sustainable design and things like that. So I'm coming in kind of like each project is kind of a new canvas to work from. Whereas here it's very much Irish people, I think, like the same, you know, like we like familiarity. So it's good and bad, but I suppose it's good to mix it up. I think there's no rules I think there's room for everybody.
There does seem to be a trend over the last while here, at least, to have especially new show homes and developments filled with these, you know, neutral colours, plumped pillows, the kind of the beiges, the greys, the creams, and they do actually all begin to look the same after a while if you're viewing them, you know, especially the kitchens, the kind of the dove greys and you know,
and they look
colours.
Great, you know, they look beautiful.
They're like a hotel though.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's easy to look around. You know, I suppose for me, I want to challenge the space. And fortunately, the developers, like I've worked with Hollybrook Homes a lot and Knight Frank on some of their show homes and show flats. So they've given me the freedom to, you know, I did an Art Deco Great Gatsby theme, and it's won lots of awards because obviously, you know, it's fun. Well, it was suitable, you know, it was an apartment. So you're either, it's an entertainment home. It's not the space itself wasn't necessarily for family. So it was a perfectly suited. Whereas another one, the other show home I did was much more family friendly. So I think once it fits the build, but I do think it's nice to see the neutrals, and then I also think it's nice to see something a bit more out there. But either way, you know, I think everyone knows their own style, and it can work against you if you don't like, say, the style I've chosen. You might not like the house. You have to be very careful. Like, there's a borderline of keeping it, as you said, something commercial. But at the same time, I think Irish people are curious by nature. Okay. I think we all love a bit of like we love to see new things. So I think slowly but surely, I think the show homes are going to kind of expand out and be a bit more wow, like a bit more LA, let's say.
Oh gosh, all right. Well, we look forward to that. I'm speaking with Natasha Rock from the Interiors Nerd. Now, give us a few tips, Natasha, because it strikes me that a lot of people who are staging their home for rent or sale mightn't have a lot of money, and they mightn't have the resources to kind of do it at a very plush level, or maybe get in somebody like yourself to do it for them. Give us some ideas of what they should be looking out for just to get their home ready. I presume things like bright colours, lighting is important. Would you? And I know that you can rent furniture and paintings that you can use just for that sales or rental process. Do you recommend that?
You know, I have, like, my company offers rental, and there's a lot of other companies in Ireland and I think in the UK as well, which we have facilities to do. So absolutely. But, you know, based on budget, if you're just trying to keep it very simple, I would take a staging project or a styling project like any project in any business. So the initial thing is to plan it, you know, to survey the space, whether you have floor plans or just taking photographs of each room, and look at what's working and what's not. What can The second thing is what can stay and what can go. And you'd be surprised, sometimes shuffling around the furniture on looking at the plan of what needs to go and stay is very fundamental. You don't actually need like as much as you think. If anything, a lot of the time I would say take things out to people and donate them or get a skip and things like that.
Yeah, people don't like
clutter. Around and actually, yes, exactly. Decluttering, and then obviously cleaning, getting a deep clean. And then that will kind of highlight, do you need a repaint? So this is kind of where I would start. I would kind of look at what needs to stay, what needs to go, then what like needs to be fixed. If there's any, you know, technicals or electricals or plumbing or anything like that, make a list of all the people and the things you need. And then essentially just look around and say, what can you improve room by room, and pick the priorities. You know, if there's a beautiful view, then maybe get that the windows cleaned, you know, focus on that if that's a unique selling point. So look at the USPs, the two or three of them, and focus on that and put the money into that. And then, as I said, you know, it really depends on what you want to spend. But, you know, nowadays everyone, you know, knows how to paint. You know, we can get into woodies, everyone has more free time. So, you know, you can quickly touch up yourself, you know, just to kind of, I think for me personally, I wouldn't go too crazy in terms of just putting it together, like, unless you have like an overall theme mood board. So if you really want to go colorful, I would plan it very, very carefully. Like, do Pinterest, you know, just put mood boards together and plan each room, you know, because you'd be surprised sometimes it doesn't work out. And add in
lots of times it doesn't work out.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, sometimes it's better to keep it simple. And then just from there, I suppose we can order online and the store should be starting to open. But just mix and match accessories, you know, getting some candles in, some accessories, some throws, some new sheets. And you'd be so surprised in those small adjustments, you know, you can really do a lot. Okay. And then obviously you can extend that out to more painting, a gardener, you know, it depends on your budget. But it's very much kind of to keep the space as clean and clear as possible and create a lifestyle for that person. You know, whether it's a student, a family, like, create the vision for them of giving them an incentive to want to move in there, you know, to offer that to them.
And know your audience
exactly,
for who you're renting or selling to. All right. Well, listen, fantastic tips there, Natasha. And we're delighted to have you on the Home Show. It's been a long time. I know that we had planned to have you before now. So it's great that you could make it along. And people can find you on the Design Nerd, the Interiors Nerd, that's NRD. Natasha Rocker Devine,
thank you so much
on the Home Show.
The Home Show on News Talk.
Thanks to the Commission for Regulation of Utilities, Ireland's independent energy and water regulator. Let the CRU help you switch on to your rights, savings and energy safety.
Welcome back to The Home Show with me, Sinead Ryan. Now, Roisin Murphy is joining me again this week on the line. Roisin, you're very welcome to The Home Show, as always, every week.
Thank you, Sinead. Lovely to be here.
I was thinking about this first item we were going to talk about because during the really nice weather last week, which now seems a very long time ago, we were doing the garden and all the stuff that you'd advised in the last couple of shows you were on, tidied it up, and you kind of shamed me into, you know... not into actually doing it, you'll understand, but getting himself out to do it and supervising all that had to be done. And it's looking a lot better and it's great. But one of the things that we decided to do was stick up a bird feeder to try and achieve. So we're loving the bird song at the moment and there's a lot more nature and we've a couple of trees in the garden and all that. So I couldn't believe the different types, the ranges. So I couldn't get over how many different ones there are and I was at a loss then which one to get. So anyway, got a bird feeder, hung it from a tree, and who was the first visitor? Wasn't a bird. It was a squirrel.
A cat.
A squirrel.
A squirrel.
Came down.
What did you put down?
Tried. What is one of these kind of nuts and seeds multi-mix? Yeah. It looked like a bit like kind of bad granola. And a squirrel came down and did his best to try and steal the stuff out of it before I rooted him away. So anyway, I thought it would be a good idea to advise me a bit too late what I should have done and what I might have done when it comes to bird feeders. And I haven't seen a bird.
Okay, well, I think it's very timely because apparently they're actually, despite what we think, you know, they might even be suffering from a bit of lack of food. Some birds, because of the dry weather, it's very hard. There's no earthworms. There's that kind of element of food that's missing, particularly for early nesters or whatever it is. So they actually say we should be putting out things like grubs and worms for certain animals, breeds of birds at the moment. So it depends on the... I know it's a bit gross, but if you think about it, trying to get into that earth at the moment, anybody who's doing gardening, you know, it's the ground is solid hard at the moment. So what they're saying is that basically be careful the kind of food you put out. Don't put loose peanuts or dry hard foods or say chunks of bread. Or those, you know, you get a fat ball because during the spring or summer months, because you might, sometimes the birds will take that food back to the nest as well, and it causes the little birds to choke, the little nests to choke. Okay. I know. And then the other thing is that if you are doing birdhouses are all de rigueur at the moment, they are all the rage, but you want to design it so that it's the right size depending on the kind of birds. Say if you want a load of small little birds rather than your wood pigeons and all that, you make it like so that the wood pigeon can't get in. Sounds very cruel.
I know, but that's
VIP
important.
Lodge.
No, you do, because you want to favour. Yeah. I don't know why I want to favour the little wrens and thrushes and robins, but I do. Yeah. I don't want a big magpie coming down and chomping away at whatever I put out.
You have to make, so you can get ones that would actually adjustable roofs and stuff so that you can vary it. But what I would like, there's the smaller, the kind of, the aperture for the bird, you won't be able to get that. The lads won't be able to get in. So, you know, you make a tiny little entrance for the smaller birds.
Now, is that is that like avian discrimination then? I mean,
it's absolute avian discrimination. You see, I think the pigeons in a way, like the other thing to do is to put... you know, say traditionally you see them on these straight poles, and I never knew why, but it's actually to stop cats climbing them. So, you know, you'd be tempted to put them on a lovely rustic garrulous trunk. Don't do that, because the cats will get up and they'll have their little birdie flyby dinner takeaway. So you want small buildings for small birds and big buildings for big birds. Now, I have to say, I got a lovely Sarah Jenkins basket one as well. She gifted me one actually with Bridget's Cross, which was quite a combination. She makes these absolutely gorgeous willow baskets. She makes tiny little bird feeders as well. So, you know what, because you'll see the wire ones with the peanuts and all this sort of stuff, but she makes ones, and then she has little balls that go into them. But they're quite elegant. They're like a little window basket. So, and then the other thing you can do is you can make an arrangement. I've seen people where they make arrangements of tree houses on, say, a wall. So they make it look like a little village of different types of bird houses. Oh, for goodness sake. I thought you'd like that. Or
I thought I was being generous, sticking up a little plastic tube with seeds in it.
But it is nice. But there's that. They're very on trend at the moment, because okay. I suppose everybody's in their gardens. And again, I know we're talking about homeschooling. I hate that word homeschooling, because it's not voluntary for some of us. But that idea that you say if you're out, for instance, and the kids. Now, obviously, this season is kind of gone, but there's still primary school kids theoretically still at school. So you can do a little bit of geography out of the garden, build that, you know, it's a lovely way to get kind of nature study going and to have that bit of interaction about nature in your own garden.
Now, I'm just wondering, what would Peter, your builder on Home Rescue, say if you said, Peter, would you ever build a little bird village up on that wall there?
Well, you see, that all of that would be edited out, what he would say. And then he'd go, well, no, he's now, in fairness to him, he's all enthusiastic on the first day of shooting. So what you do is present it to him, he'd go, yeah, that's super, and then day three he'd be firing
get your,
bird
get
houses
your bad
down the
news
line.
Out of the get way you, first
yeah.
All right.
But there's,
okay,
there's ways to do it as well. With there's little things online that say if you know the orange stick stuff we used to do years ago, where you'd make something out of orange sticks.
Oh,
and
okay,
glue.
Yeah,
so there's nice ways to do it with kids. But I have to say as well, I was in a most I saw the most gorgeous garden during the week as well, where somebody had painted their walls teal blue.
Right.
It's my friend Tara, who's actually, she's a significant birthday, and she showed me this. And I thought, God, you know what? It was a real eye popper for the garden. We talk about it all the time, putting colour in the garden walls, but that with a few bird houses, you know, you wouldn't notice that it wasn't sunny. Like it could be a real feature in a garden as well. This like a place to observe birds, and then the kids take notes about who's coming in and out of the garden during the spring and summer. And you really, it's a great way to learn about nature and seasons and all that sort of stuff.
Okay.
But basically, you need to think seeds rather than nuts as well, I think, and keep your squirrels away.
All right. And no permission, planning permission required for that.
Nope.
No. Can you get a whole village of birds in? Right. And
a
of course,
village
it's important to say that we need to leave plenty of water out too for the birds. Isn't that right?
You need plenty of water, but it is a good time to leave them. I also, I don't know if you, I have a couple of little wall growing apple trees now. I say I am very bad at this. I'm not a great pruner, so I can't let, but I leave a few apples on every year for birds to eat as well in the winter, and they just stay there. So there's other ways of doing it as well, and put boots on the wall, boots on trees and stuff with little nuts in them.
Now, is it a good idea when you're, because we've spoken on the show before about garden furniture and barbecue equipment and fire pits and all that.
Yes.
Where do you stand in terms of leaving out outdoor furniture? I mean, I'm inclined just to look, I'm lazy, and I also don't have a big garage. So leaving it out and then throwing like a tarp around it. It's probably better for it to be brought in somewhere, though, is it? Or does it matter?
I suppose that's
it. Does it matter what it's made from?
Well, no, it does. And I always say, I think I've said it before, it's one of the reasons I always think that for deck furniture, it's very nice for it to come out of your house if you're having dinner, so that you have double doors that you can wheel a table out. So you're not left in this situation where, which I have no garage or shed, but I do have what would have been an extremely good enameled outside table. I think invest very heavily in garden furniture, maintain it, and it can look great all the year round. Because if you don't have... And also you can get ones that hang on walls. You can get collapsible ones that can hang on and you put a little overhanging bit on your wall or stuff. But it is very difficult for most people to have the shed, have the deck and everything. So I think to try and get good quality furniture, maintain it, put the tarp over it. But ideally speaking, you'd have a shed that you put it in.
Now, the other thing, of course, the sun might have kind of, I hope, temporarily gone away. I hope to come out again, but it's still really, really warm. And many of us, and when I say many of us, I mean me, have found it very difficult to sleep over the past couple of weeks because it has been so hot. So I'm waking up in the middle of the night really hot, throwing off the duvet, and then getting cold and waking up again to put the duvet back on. Maybe it's just me, but I don't have, and this is a plan of mine to have this winter duvet and the summer duvet and the spring duvet. Sure, who has the space and the time and the money for all of that? So tell us a little bit. We sent you off to research a little bit about bedding.
Okay.
Talk to us about that.
This is home comfort number one is bedding. I think it's the first thing I ever bought when I had my first wages was I went off to Switzer's now, defunct now, Brown Thomas, and bought very expensive bedding. I don't know where I got this notion from, but I did. And I still have it because if you invest well, you know, it'll stand to you. But also it means that you can kind of, you know, if you're a young person and you can't get on a property ladder, at least you have your own sheets and duvets. But the duvet historically comes from Sweden and Northern Europe. And it's always got goose feathers in it. And it was the big revolution in the 50s when Terence Conran came back. And apparently I think he made duvets were considered a bit odd. But then he talked about it and brought it into Habitat. And suddenly blankets were banished and the duvet became a kind of 10-second bed, and the idea that women weren't toiling and tucking in sheets and getting folds on, you know, those folds you had to get with your sheets around. It was a really liberating thing, and it came with the sexual revolution and everything was suddenly getting down and dirty underneath the bedclothes in Ireland and everywhere. So with that, the blankets were banished. But and I never really thought about it really because I absolutely love the duvet. And I kind of thought to myself, nothing much of it, right? We got blankets when you went up to college and it was a bit kind of dour. You might get an electric blanket for the poorly heated room or whatever it was. But the blankets were kind of then turned into throws or, you know, they're more decorative. Or you might have, I definitely had a lighter duvet. I had a kind of Kelly Hoppin light duvet that I got for the summer. But okay, then I did a bit of research on this and there's a new thing out at the moment because it has got very, very hot called a fever blanket. And Thomas Ferguson Linens were at me about this fever blanket up there. And I was going, what are they talking about? Why? It was a blanket that was used specifically for people who had temperatures, had high temperatures. And when they were left to sit out in the cold, they could be warm and cool at the same time. So it brought their temperature down, but it still protect. You know that awful thing when you have a temperature when you're both cold and hot at the same
time?
You're
shivering, but you're also sweating.
Yes.
So tell us how that works.
I tried
then.
It. It works. It's linen. Linen has all these mad thermal qualities, right? And we're historically one of the best countries in the world for this. So I had it out. I was gifted this and I had it out on the, you know, I thought initially I'm going to have it when, you know, when you're out eating in the late evening and you put the blanket around you to stay warm.
Yes.
It worked brilliantly, right? I thought, okay, it's going to be cold, but it's weighted, you see. So it feels very comforting because there's a weight to it. So then I thought, okay, I'm going to try it on the nights when you're really hot and you can't sleep. And I'm up in an attic, so it's not exactly, it's not cool. It works. It was extra, in fairness to them, it's a weighted linen blanket. So it has the impact of, you know, the way you look for a bit of weight in a blanket, which you do, and then, but it's cool, so you don't build up heat. So I think it is time for the blankets to make to reignite in some of the bedrooms.
Well,
Ireland.
I am with you because I am of a vintage where, you know, we would have had sheets and blankets at home when we were children. Duvets were not yet to make an appearance in Ireland. And, you know, there was that fuss about having to make your bed properly and tuck in all hospital corners and all that kind of thing.
Hospital corners,
I love the idea of a blanket. You know, like the Foxford blankets, I think, if one could do them as well. And they're just pieces that were passed down through generations. They were functional. Mm-hmm. They weren't just chucked over the back of a sofa artfully. I mean, they were used.
Yes. Useful.
And you could roll them on, roll them off. But there was something, I don't know, fixed, nurturing. Maybe it's like the swaddling effect that a duvet doesn't have.
Well, I think I think in summer in particular, they're really useful because you don't necessarily want to be under the duvet. And I mean, I'm definitely like I have one poor child who's definitely not sleeping. She's kind of rolling in through the evenings because of the heat. Like, it's very difficult to sleep in the sleet, and we're not really used to it. So I think it's time for the blankets and a sheet as well. A lovely flat sheet. You know, we've had fitted sheets and duvets. And in fairness, in Ireland, I mean, I'm a big fan of my duvet. I would not exchange duvet for the sheets and blankets and an eiderdown ever again. Don't think that will ever happen for me. But I do think you can complement them. And, you know, the throw that you have in the back of the bed now becomes a blanket and sleep on your on top of the, use the quilt as a topper. The other thing that is very nice as well is this tradition of quilting. I don't know, like where you'll have a little light eiderdown. Yeah.
The Americana kind of quilting thing. Okay. And of course, that's desperately popular in kind of arts and crafts groups and cultures like that. And it's a lovely heirloom thing to do, to take little fat bits of fabric of clothes, children's clothes maybe when they were growing up or you know, and make a wedding quilt was always a key gift in years gone by, you know, that you would prepare for a couple.
And also that, you know, the Galway shawl, I think we were talking about it a few months back. Lou Brennan loaned us a beautiful Galway shawl. That traditionally was used as a bed quilt. So when you, particularly for people who were leaving the country, they were given the shawl and it was used as bedding as well. So you had this beautiful paisley with fringe blanket that went, you know, it was used for Sunday best and it was also used to dress onto your bed as well. So maybe it's time to resurrect a few of these traditions onto the beds of Ireland.
Maybe
it'd be nice.
Well, look, let us know what you think. You can text on 53106 for 30 cent and you can email us with pictures of your quilt, your blanket, your eiderdown, maybe not your duvet, to the home show at newstalk.com and let us have a look at what you think out there. Okay, now another week, another planning commission routine. Every week it seems we're talking about developments and building. And we've had the CIF on earlier in the show and they were talking about the kind of regeneration of building now that they are back to work. One of the key sites that has been discussed now this week is Bailey Gibson Sound. Now, this is the former Player Wills factory. It's on Dublin South Circular Road. It's being built, converted into apartments. But this, I know we normally argue a lot over architectural styles on this show, and you know, there's no arbiter for taste. I'm happy to be wrong on some occasions, but I stand over my right to have a taste. This is actually, for me, a beautiful building.
It is. It would definitely, in terms of it, the style, you love Art Deco. And this is one of the rare surviving examples of Art Deco in Dublin. It's absolutely beautiful. And it's, you know, it's striking industrial look is a really beautiful kind of contrast on that street without it being overwhelming. You kind of roll down South Circular Road and there it comes, this gorgeous building.
Yeah. And there's something Germanic about it or European about it that you just don't see very often here.
Yeah, it was designed by Beckett and Harrington in 1935. So it's that old, which is also remember. But it was used as a factory right up until 2005. So it has, it is really, really nice. It's nice and symmetrical with lovely cast iron gates as well, all sorts of stuff in it. And it, of course, was bought in 2005 and then ended up in NAMA, which is it kind of wallowed for a long time there. There was a threat to take it back, but eventually it got it's part of the Hines groups that are now developing it. And they have got applied to An Bord Pleann Óla for planning permission for over 1,000 bed spaces. Now, I just to put this in context, these are, and what I think there was a big push in South Circular Road when this happened and the in area around it by people who were very vested in the proper development of the area. And they're very disappointed that it's all built to let. right? So you're talking about a build to rent, that this is not what they argued was that this redevelopment wasn't going to be a permanent community, because around Dublin 8 has a very strong community. I lived there at one period, and it is very kind of webbed into it. It's lots of yoga places, lots of coffee shops, lots of stuff like
hipster.
That.
Yeah,
it's I wouldn't call it hipster. I mean, I think because it breaches. It's very expensive. And it's not so much hipsters, like it's been there. It's been a kind of a strong tenant of Dublin middle class. And but it has quite a broad, like, working blue collar. It goes right across the gamut of both hipster, barrister, every tour in Dublin. And it also was home to the Bretzel Bakery and lots of sort of there was a strong Jewish community there at one point. So it's a very strong historical and cultural presence in Dublin. And the fact that it's going to be all built to rent is significant. And I'm just going to give you an indication of the prices they're saying. Mm-hmm. They're saying that a studio, now just prepare yourself for this.
That's a bed sit now for the rest
bed
of us.
Bed sit really is going to be 1,350 per month. One bed should rent for 1,800 and two beds for 2,250 to 2,800. That was said by a spokesman on the 4th of June.
Ouch.
So that's ouch, right? So I then looked at this and thought, how can this happen? Because do you know what I mean? It's not, you know, to say if you're renting something for 2,000 odd a month, you're talking about people who have earnings to get a mortgage, right? What you'd need to earn to pay for 2,800 as a mortgage would be about 120,000 euros, I think. But you'd be mortgaging something for 700,000 euros at that cost. So what you're basically saying is people are paying a mortgage price of 700,000 euros. So surely we should be able to provide. If people have to rent at that high price, surely we should be able to provide mortgages for them at that price. Mm. That's my only argument on this. There's not enough build to buy in this scheme. And they have made concession to the COVID thing, but it seems primarily that it relates to the public spaces. So you're still talking about, like, it is, you know, there's a sort of, there's 10% going to be social housing.
Yes.
That's what they say.
Under the rules, yeah.
But I think that, again, that those, how they are, how we were not quite sure about how that contract is going to be made up with social housing in Ireland, how that goes on. Is it for the 25-year limited lease, in which case it's gone and the rents get up? So it's again talking about the fact that we're providing very expensive bill to rent.
OK, well, listen, I'll tell you, we'll wait to see what happens. We'll have you talk about it again when we see. I suppose there's that trade-off. I think everybody will be delighted something's going to happen. It is feeding into a small segment of the housing market that you don't agree with necessarily, but therefore, you know, they will be snapped up, I've no doubt about it. And we'll see what it's going to look like. I really am sorry,
it's
though,
going
that
to
that
be beautiful.
Isn't.
It is going to be beautiful, but I think that one of the things that we are discovering from the Docklands is that the really high-end stuff isn't getting snapped up, which is interesting.
Mm. Okay. Now, we've a few minutes left to talk about, that isn't our building of the week, but we also have a building of the week instead of an object of design. Tell us, Roisin, what you, I don't know what you select for us each week in advance, so tell us a little bit about what you've
chosen. I got this in response from somebody. I featured this in an article last week about the Pigeon House candles that we've had on our show before.
Yes.
So this is the Pigeon House stacks.
Ah,
okay,
lovely.
Pool bag.
Okay. Well, everybody knows what they look like.
I think it's very interesting that they were deemed for listing by Dublin City Council. They all voted to have them listed as protected structures. I got contacted from Dermot Lacey to say that although the Dublin City Council voted them in to be protected, the ESB, I presume this is because it is considered a part of the national infrastructure. I'm not sure, even though they're defunct. And the agreement is that nothing will happen to them without them writing to Dublin City Council. But it's mad to think that they're
not
still protected.
Wow. Okay. I am. And you know what? I'm thinking now of our listeners out there. For every one of those people like you, and as it happens, like me, my goodness, we're in agreement twice this week, who loves the Pigeon House stacks, there are the same number of people for whom they are a complete and utter eyesore on the landscape.
So, do you think so?
I think there are. People don't
like them. I'm not sure. I think that they have become very much universally accepted as a symbol of Dublin. like you see them everywhere. They're all over T-shirts, everything. That they are the one piece of industrial architecture that is absolutely kind of everybody kind of goes, they have a soft spot for the Pigeon House. Like partly because I think the history of the ESB, and maybe it's a nod to the ESB, they have done so, they are just our success stories in terms of the electrification of Ireland in 1928. None of us forget that date, but it was just an extraordinary achievement. And that these two things with the pink and white, and they're sort of joyful and summery even in the middle.
And it's a lovely, it is. And it's a lovely building actually to bring to us this week, and very, very unusual. Well, thank you for that, Roisin. And we will talk to you again next week. You're on Roisin Murphy Architect on Instagram, and we will put up a picture of the Pigeon House because we can. And at Sinead_Ryan on Twitter. And I know you'll do the same because you've lots of merch with those stacks on it. All right. Well, that's all we have for you this week, folks. Folks, thanks for joining us again. My thanks, as always, to the production team. Rachel Ryan, Stephen Jordan and Jojo Cardoso was on sound, and Bobby's up next.
The Home Show on News Talk.
Thanks to the Commission for Regulation of Utilities, Ireland's independent energy and water regulator. Let the CRU help you switch on to your rights, savings and energy safety.